You're listening to a professional development seminar brought to you by the Women of Color in Technology STEM Conference, where STEM is a girl thing.
So good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ted Imes. I'm with Northrop Grumman, and welcome you to the Want a Security Clearance Seminar. There's a couple of housekeeping notes I'm asked to read to you. Is everyone signed in outside if you're interested in obtaining continuing education credits? If not, make sure before you leave you want to sign up outside. There are surveys inside the mobile app if you have it on your phone. We would definitely appreciate your feedback. And we have the one microphone here in the hallway for questions. We decided to gather around the table to make it a little more convenient since we have such a small, cozy crowd. So I'm going to let Lindsay and Monica introduce themselves.
So we're going to go through a few of the slides, but I think the advantage here is to make sure that we can answer any questions you have. So please feel free as we go through the slides to ask any questions. These are the resident experts here. If we don't know, we'll point you to the place where you can find the information. But today we're going to talk about the various levels of security clearances. And this is with reference to mostly Department of Defense and Department of Energy. Is there anyone here that's already started the process of getting a clearance? Okay, one person. So we'll speak about it in the terms of assuming nobody's ever been applying for a security clearance. So there are various levels. Everything is listed from top to bottom, but let's start at the bottom. Unclassified means information you're working on and no technical classification. Then we go up to restricted work, confidential, secret, and then top secret. And that's actually not the end of the list. It goes further, but these are your major categories. Eligibility to access classified information, commonly known as security clearance, granted to those who have an appropriate need to know. It's not something you automatically get just because you get a certain job. So your need to know for the work that's going to be doing has to be associated with it. And it must be determined that the individual's personal and professional history, and I think Lindsay wanted us to highlight this and italicize it because it's important. It's your personal and your professional history. This is about your lifestyle. So if you think there's some skeletons or bones in your closet that you don't want anyone else to know about, doesn't stop you from applying, but be ready to speak to it, be ready to answer to it. This is about your personal and your professional life. And these are the six bullets that are the basis for the application process. They need to determine your loyalty to the United States, your strength of character, are you a person that can be trustworthy, honest and reliable, discretion and sound judgment. The easy one to think about there is your credit history. Are you a person that pays your bills on time? They're going to look at that. Freedom from conflicting allegiances and potential for coercion. Are you a person that can be easily bribed into doing something you really don't want to do? And the willingness and ability to abide by regulations governing use, handling, and protection of classified information. Today's worst enemy to classified information, emails. People do it all the time without thinking. Eligibility will be granted only where facts and circumstances indicate access is clearly consistent with national security interests. Who can tell me what national security interests are? Anyone? What do you think it is? What do you think that means? National security interests. Yes, ma'am.
It's best for protecting our company secrets.
Yep. Do you want people to know the pin to your debit card? No, that's a secret that you have, so you hold it dearly. Well, this country has a lot of secrets that we have to hold dearly, and we're entrusting you to do that. Access to classified information will be terminated when the individual no longer has need. It's not like a driver's license. You get it once, and you keep it for the rest of your life. You will keep it as long as you have the need to keep it. So with that, I'll let Lindsay or Monica, if you have any comments so far, if you want to start from here. How's the mic working?
It's working. Can y'all hear me? I think the next one is...
I was just going to make a comment real quick, too. Ted was saying, you know, that the... Ted was saying that the access is terminated when you no longer have a need to know, but your obligation continues forever, right? So when you agree to, you know, a position of confidence like this where you're granted a security clearance, you agree that, you know, you will hold these secrets that you learn forever, right? There's no, you know, just because you leave the job doesn't mean you can tell people information. So, I mean, it's a very serious thing, and it's very important. And I think Monica's going to give us a little more information.
Okay. If you could go ahead and advance this slide. Okay. Every employer or organization wants to know that they can trust their employees and members, right? Say if you had a very personal and private situation that you just felt like you needed to share with somebody, right? You're going to be very careful about who you choose to tell. It's going to be someone that you don't think is going to use it against you later or go back and tell someone. So the U.S. government is the same way. They want to know that they can, who they can trust with their secrets. Okay, so the background investigation is a way for them to know that, to understand that. So the background security investigation starts after a person has received a job offer or conditional offer of employment, and also after they've completed the security questionnaire, okay, and any other required forms such as fingerprint cards and any releases that need to be signed. And the questionnaire is usually the standard form 86. That's the questionnaire for national security positions. And it's very important that the questionnaire be filled out thoroughly, accurately, with honesty and with candor. Just make sure there are no mistakes, because if there are any mistakes, it could delay the process, delay the investigation. And if there are any, you know, deliberate false statements, then a person could, you know, lose their job, or, you know, questions could come up about eligibility. Which brings us to the purpose for the questionnaire. So the security questionnaire is a tool for the background investigation. It's basically used for the government to do investigations and reinvestigations and any ongoing evaluations for people who are under consideration or who want to retain their clearance. Because, let's face it, people change, things happen. A person who may not have been a threat when they first got their clearance may become a threat later on in life due to some unfortunate circumstances, okay? So say that friend that you entrusted your secret with on down the line, for some reason, they don't like you anymore, or, you know, they're jealous of you now. So now they have a motive to rat you out or say something bad about you. So basically, the government is the same. They don't necessarily, you know, trust that everyone is going to be the same always. So everyone is up for reinvestigation, you know, periodically, because they want to make sure that the person is continue to be a trusted with their information. Okay, so questions will also come up about your adherence to security requirements, basically your character, trustworthiness. Questions will come up, as Ted said, about your credit, your criminal activity, any drug or alcohol use, mental health, and just your overall allegiance to the United States. They want to know who the applicants, they want to know who you are. And also federal agency checks may be made on your spouse or your ex-spouse or anyone that is living with you, your live-in boyfriend or girlfriend or your... you had a question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you keep saying allegiance to the United States, what do you mean?
Like, basically, are you... there are people out there that, you know, you're a member, or you belong to the United States. Yes, yeah, citizen, that's the word. Thank you, somebody out there. You're a citizen, but you may not necessarily feel all that... If someone else out in another country says, hey, I'll give you X number of $1 million if you give me, you know what I'm saying? So you may not feel that
Loyalty. Thank you, everyone. You may not feel as loyalty. You may not feel that loyalty to say no. I'm not gonna, you know, rat out my country. This is my country. You know, someone could be bribed. So as Ted was saying, how vulnerable are you to coercion, and how easily are you bribed? So your allegiance to the United States can come up. You know. And it starts, and it may not necessarily be, you know, just with other people. I mean, you may not have had an opportunity to be bribed to, but someone else, you know, may be able to bribe you with or to talk you into something that you may not necessarily want to do. So they will, questions can come up about your roommates, whoever you've lived with, anyone who can testify to your character, and also your immediate family members, because, you know, they know you well better than anyone else. So did you want
to I just wanted to add something. That something is coming up in a couple of slides, but there are, and I mean, maybe do we want to jump ahead real quick? Because I think this sort of partially answers a question that you had. So when it says, are you clearable? They look at the whole person, you know, and it's really a picture of you as a person. But there are a couple things that are, you know, non-negotiable. One of them is that you have to be a U.S. citizen. That's one of the non-negotiable things. Other things like a felony record is kind of one of those. Next slide might even have a... Yeah, what can prevent me? You know, these are kind of things that if you are unwilling to surrender a foreign passport, you have a dishonorable discharge from the armed forces, you're determined to be mentally incompetent by a mental health professional approved by the Department of Defense. If you currently have or addicted to an unlawful controlled substance, or you have had a criminal conviction resulting in incarceration for a period of 1 year or more. So those are sort of pretty much the non-negotiables. So I know we're going a little out of order right now, but something that people ask if they look at, you know, the second bullet there. Right, that doesn't say if you have ever tried a drug, you can't get a security clearance. And that's kind of a question I think that comes up a lot with security clearances, is people are like, oh my gosh, I tried this one time, can I never get a security clearance? And they're not saying you tried something one time, you know, that shows that, you know, that trying something one time doesn't say you have, you know, poor judgment, or, you know, that you're not going to be able to be clearable. But if you, you know, currently have an addiction to an unlawful substance, probably not a good thing.
They're not looking for perfect people. Nobody's perfect.
Right, exactly. Everybody has something, right? I mean, often, maybe not everybody, I don't know. But, you know, almost everybody has something that you know, that requires them to fill out some extra piece of paper, or, you know, some addendum form to, you know, because of something that's happened in their past. And that doesn't mean that you can't get a security clearance. But, you know, any of these red flags are things that are almost certainly going to make you ineligible. But, yeah, so, you know, when you say if you tried something once, right, like if you smoked marijuana one time, probably not a big deal. If you killed a person one time, a big deal. You know what I mean? It kind of depends on the level of what you did that one time. But, you know, exactly, you don't have to be infallible or have an absolutely spotless record in order to be granted a security clearance, but you have to be trustworthy and reliable, and, you know, what they consider, I say, you know, very difficult to be bribed, those kind of things.
It's probably worse if you try to hide it.
Yeah, and for sure.
And then if you just go ahead and reveal, and because they take into consideration your age and your maturity level at the time and how often it happened and your willingness, you know, so they take different things into consideration. So
sure.
Do
you want to go back a couple, because we skipped?
I think we pretty much.
We skipped the OPM hack.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Thing.
I don't want to skip too much. I'm just trying to follow through with the conversations. And one of the things,
sorry.
If I was sitting at the table, I would be asking myself now, what is it that the security clearance is actually? What do you actually being told that you can't tell anybody else? see the iPad on the table, everybody has a cell phone. Does anybody know how to get free cell phone service? No. So the companies keep that close to themselves. They can be done, but they keep it close to themselves, and that's to them, that's a secret for them to keep. Now, their employees don't have security clearances, but that's what we're talking about. Information that's usable or information that's needed for the systems and things that we have in this country to operate that we just can't tell everybody. So that's what the reason for a security clearance
is. Even a real example from, one of the kinds of things we do, right, is we build radars. And there are certain things about the radars that you wouldn't want people to know because it would be easier for them to exploit them. So, like, you don't want them to know exactly what frequency you're operating on. Right, because then they could tune your frequency and jam your frequency or something like that, right? So there's, specific parameters about a lot of products are things that, generally want to know, or strategies about things, how we respond in certain situations, those kind of things. Things that would make it easier for other people to take advantage of us by knowing ahead of time what we're going to do.
Who has Wells Fargo checking account? You got the recent email that says Wells Fargo was hacked. The Office of Personnel Management was hacked. All of the people who got security clearances, that form that Nicole talked about, that SF-86 form, all of that data is kept by the Office of Personnel Management. They got hacked. Those of us with clearances got a message that said, your classified data may have been compromised. So in this world that we live in, nothing is totally safe. If the Office of Personnel Management, the government can get hacked, nothing is totally safe. So that's the reason for having security clearances and being so close to trying to monitor the people who have access to this. Ready to go forward? Okay, we talked about are you clearable. We talked about what can prevent it. But what are some of the additional obligations? When we travel out of the country, we have to let folks know where we're going, how long we're going to be, when we're going to come back. You heard Lindsay mentioned about dual passports. If you have a foreign country passport, in order to go through this process, sometimes you have to surrender that passport because you can only have a passport from the United States in most cases. It's going to take you in most cases. Some countries, they strongly suggest you don't travel to. Before we go anywhere, we get in-country briefings. What's the terrorist threat level in that country? What do you need to watch out for? And you probably can't talk about the details of the clearance that you had. You don't walk around with a shirt, because you just don't. We're told when we leave our place of employment, we take off our badges, because there's people at the restaurant where you're having lunch that can just be looking. Say, okay, who's who? So you have to take a certain piece of self-responsibility to make sure that you just don't advertise. Okay, Lindsay, this is one you like.
So in addition to the levels that we went through in the beginning where there was, top secret and secret and confidential information, there are also some special access, or the two things in particular, sensitive compartmented information and special access programs. And they're sort of like it's a caveat on the clearance level that you have. So for example, you could have a secret clearance and then you could be caveated into a special access program, which means it's something that's even more closely held than the collateral secret level. And so there's additional investigation that they do when you're going through that, and some of those kind of programs have very, stringent, the customer has a very stringent, rule, like there'll be a program where they'll say, we won't take anyone who's ever traveled, or I guess in the last 7 years or 10 years or whatever, outside of the United States. Like they have special rules, but it's really a way to handle certain types of classified information relating to specific national security topics. And frequently there are programs that aren't even publicly acknowledged. And so the sensitive nature of this requires special handling. So, if the U.S. is, developing a technology that they don't want people to know that we're working on, then, it would have that kind of special access or sense of compartmented information designation on it, which is...
It looks, from this level, as I know what Lindsay's talking about,
yeah.
Here's a perfect demonstration. Everybody in this room may have a top secret clearance. That means you all can come through that door. Once you're in that door, an SCI or an SAP might say you can only sit at this table, or you can only sit at that table. And the tables are walled off, so you know each other's in the room, but this table doesn't know what that table knows, and vice versa. So that's the further compartmentalization of it. You all got access to the room, but you can only sit at a certain table.
Okay, so yeah, SCI is in the intelligence community, so things that happen, like National Security Agency, those kind of things. Department of Defense is the special access programs. And, yeah, so, I mean, we kind of already talked about this, right? It's the way to control day-to-day access of classified information. If there's certain information that not everybody needs to know who's cleared to, say we're all cleared to the same program, right? But one specific aspect of the program requires special knowledge of additional information, but we don't really want everyone to know all of that, then you would say, you know, this subset of people gets this additional information that they need to effectively do their work, but it's not information that we just want to give everyone on the program.
This further means it really defines on cutting it into a smaller piece of pie. You want to talk on need to know?
Sure. So depending on the level of classification of the information, there are different rules that apply to the clearance level needed to view that information or how it must be handled or transferred or destroyed once it's no longer in use. And access is restricted on a need-to-know basis. So the concept of need-to-know is basically that just because you have a security clearance doesn't automatically give you access to all the information at that classification level and everything below that, okay? You must also have a legitimate need-to-know as well as the required clearance in order to access the information.
Okay, we've got a...
It assured me that it was
a rough issue. Yeah, we tried it earlier.
Okay.
Need to know is one of the most fundamental security principles. According to the DoD 5200.2-R, need-to-know is defined as a determination made by a possessor of classified information that a prospective recipient in the interest of national security has a requirement for access to, knowledge or possession of the classified information in order to perform tasks or services essential to the fulfillment of an official United States government program. The practice of need-to-know limits the damage that can be done by a trusted insider who goes bad. Knowledge, possession of, or access to classified information shall not be afforded to any individual solely by virtue of the individual's office, position, or security clearance. Notice that the responsibility to determine need to know is the responsibility of the individual who possesses the classified information. As someone who works with classified information, it's a decision you may have to face when you least expect it. One reason to be constantly aware of need to know is that some trusted insiders have gone bad. When this happens, careful observation of need-to-know helps to limit the damage. When someone looks for information that they don't need to know, it may just be simple curiosity, but that's not the only possibility. Here's an example where it's pretty clear that an insider was accessing material he did not need to know for nefarious purposes. Leandro Aragoncillo grew up in the Philippines, immigrated to the United States, and joined the U.S. Marines. During a successful military career, he was appointed the staff assistant to military advisors in the office of the vice president. At a White House function, he met the president of the Philippines, Joseph Estrada, who pocketed his business card. Sometime later, after Estrada's presidency collapsed in scandal, he had an associate contact Aragoncillo and ask for help saving the presidency. They appealed to his Filipino patriotism. Aragon Cio began stealing and passing along classified documents. After he retired from the Marines, Aragon Cio began a new job as a civilian FBI analyst. Now he ran unauthorized database queries on an FBI case management system and passed information about American political judgments, anti-terrorist plans, and military actions to his continuing contacts in the Philippines. The queries were unauthorized because they were for information he had no need to know. He sought out information that went far beyond what he needed to do his job. He used that information to betray his adopted country. If Leandro Aragon Cio had asked you for information, would you have asked him why he needed to know? Need to know can be really hard. It goes against our natural instincts and everything that we've been taught about getting along in groups. Breakdowns in applying the need to know principle don't usually stem from deliberate misbehavior. Instead, they arise from people trying to be helpful and cooperative, things we are taught to do from early childhood. Need to know sounds so simple. The need to know principle says that having the clearance for information is only half the issue. The other half is having the need to know. The concern here is not simply the possibility of someone like Mr. Aragon Cio committing espionage, but ensuring that information deemed critical to national security receive the tightest protection. Individuals with authorized access to classified information are required to limit access to that information only to individuals whose clearance and need to know has been verified. The need to know principle dictates that you, as an authorized holder of information, only share the information when two conditions are met. These are: 1. The requester has the appropriate clearance and access. 2. The requester needs to know the information in order to perform his or her job functions. When both conditions are met, provide the information. Verifying that the requester has the appropriate clearance is usually straightforward. You see their badge or know that the communication is coming down through channels cleared at the appropriate level. Verifying their need to know, on the other hand, may require some judgment. If it's not clear to you that the requester needs the information, then ask program management. When it comes to need to know, if you are an authorized holder of classified information, it's your responsibility to verify the need to know of anyone you want to share the information with. Applying the need to know principle is a contribution to protecting national security that only you can make. Remember, need to know imposes a dual responsibility on all authorized holders of classified information. Limit your request for information to that which you have a genuine need to know. You may be expected to explain why you need to know it. Refrain from discussing classified information in areas where the discussion may be overheard by persons who do not have a need to know the subject of conversation. If someone asks you for classified information, you are expected to ensure they are cleared appropriately and have an official need to know. You are also obliged to report to your security office any coworker who repeatedly violates the need to know principle.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same concept. I mean, people have always told me the way to judge whether you're gossiping is, are you part of the problem or part of the solution? If not, you know, it's gossip. So do you need to be talking about whatever you're saying?
It's official stuff they're saying, gossiping stuff that I didn't even know exactly stuff that was involved with the institution. So it was at a higher level than
that. Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Well, like they said, sometimes people aren't deliberately trying to, I mean, it said, our nature is to help people out. If someone wants to know something, it's just, you know, we're trying to be friendly, we're trying to help them out, but it's just, we still have to, you know, judge whether or not, you know, this person really needs the information.
I was going to say, this seems like a kind of silly story, but a story from my personal experience. I was talking to someone who's retired from the Navy, and he was talking about his experience on a submarine. And I just said, and I was totally curious, and there was a reason I had this question, but I was like, how deep do submarines go? And he looks at me and he goes, that's classified. And I was like, right, that makes sense. You know, but I wasn't even thinking about it in that, you know, in that vein. I was just really curious about, you know, about something he had previously said about submarines and how it related to another experience I'd had in my life, you know, and so I was just like, and a lot of it is people are just really curious about various things, and they don't even, I mean, you know, I've seen this video. I've been in a classified job, yet I still asked a question that was totally inappropriate. And you know, and he did the right thing. And he said, he didn't say, well, he's like, I totally understand that answer, and that's okay. And I think, if you were really concerned about the things you were hearing and the things that people were saying, it depends if the person, one of the people talking, was your supervisor. If not, you could go to your supervisor and just, bring up. So obviously you can't unhear the things you heard, and occasionally they have things where they'll end up clearing people to things because of things they accidentally found. That they were information they were given otherwise. Probably what it sounds like what might happen is, if you went to your supervisor or some other, trusted person in a position of authority, depending on your supervisor's involvement in this, that likely the people who were engaging in the discussion would be counseled to, or shown this video or something like that, to remind them that, you do have to think about what you're saying. And who you're saying, who can hear you.
The same thing happened with me. A question comes up sometimes about how fast does an aircraft carrier go? That's classified as well. So, yeah, I was just a young engineer. I'm like, hey, how fast do they go? But, yeah, same thing. Person said that it was classified. So they gave me an idea but didn't give me the actual number.
So why even be concerned about having a security clearance? One of the things we wanted to make aware to you is that there is a whole population of jobs that you are unable to perform unless you have the security clearance. And it's a significant portion of the technical type of jobs, which is why if you don't have a clearance, you can still work at most of the technology companies, but understand that that technology company has a whole nother breadth of jobs that you're not available to apply for. This is one of the websites that commonly lists all the classified type positions, positions that require security clearances at various companies. So on any given day when you pull up clearjobs.com, there's hundreds of jobs there. Hundreds of jobs every day. The most highly technical, the most technologically advanced equipment typically requires clearances because, as Lindsay pointed out, you don't want everybody to know yet. It's your trade secret. So a good website for you to take a look at when you think about, do I want to even go through the security process? Now, we're talking about a process here that is your personal and professional history. You have to decide if you want to go through that process or not. But this will give you an idea of seeing what types of jobs you've been eligible for. So with that, I'm going to open it up to questions. I was trying to listen as if I was sitting in the audience and didn't know anything about clearances. You have got to have a ton of questions.
Where my student loans are out there, they get $2,000, but it's just student loans. Like, how does that?
We're not investigators for clearances. All we can tell you is that would be okay, and you'll have to provide an explanation.
I don't think student loans are a problem. It's about someone who is in deep debt who may have a reason to accept the $1 million that I was telling you about earlier. If someone is bankrupt or if someone is in deep debt or desperate for money, then they're more likely to be bribed with money than someone, we pretty much all have student loans. I've been out of school for a long time.
Having student loans isn't, yes, it's on your credit report, but it's not. They're looking for things like, are you 90 days, more than 90 days or more past due, I think, is one of the questions. Like, have you ever had an account closed because you didn't pay? Have you ever had an account go to collections? Like, those kind of things. Like, having a student loan is not... That's fine.
If you had $1 million worth of debt on your credit report,
sure.
If you had a $10,000 job, that's a red flag.
You're I'll say recent graduate, but recent within, I don't know what the loan repayment term is, for most like recent student loans.
You're trying to skip out on the loan, that talks to your character. That's the type of
yeah, thing. But just having a loan is not.
Yeah. Any general questions? Yes, ma'am.
So are most of these jobs for the clearances for contractors?
So,
I was going to have to take a polygraph for a job offer. I actually had been offered a job, and I guess the clearance level that I was going to need required me to, I was going to have to take a polygraph. I did not take the polygraph because I ended up working where I am now. They gave me my current job gave me a better offer, but for the job that I was offered the other place, they were going to need to give me a polygraph test. And I was a little bit nervous about it, and you know, my recruiter, he tried to, you know, calm my fears. He did say that you know, some people try to beat it, and that's what we've been talking about. Don't try to beat the system. Don't try to hold back information or lie about information. I think that someone tried to take sedatives so that they could lower their heart rate and breathing or something like that, and they ended up falling asleep during the polygraph. So that's somewhat, you know, it's kind of funny, but I mean, yeah. The whole point that we're trying to make is if you have something to hide or if you have something you're trying to hide, you know, it may not be. But just know that some of the things that people are worried about is probably not a big issue, like you said, with your loans or, you know, like Lindsay said, if you made one little mistake earlier in life or something like that. Or
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, probably when you were a kid, your parent, teacher, grandparent, whoever said to you, honesty is the best policy. I mean, here, the outcomes if you're found to be lying are far worse than if you just tell the truth.
Yeah. I tell my daughter that all the time. My 6-year-old.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's kind of like, I know this, again, this seems kind of silly, right? But so my background is in applied math, and I taught calculus for a time. And I said to my students, you know, when you answer a word problem, you should look at the question and look at your answer and see if it makes sense, right? So if the question says, how long did it take to do X, Y, Z, or whatever, and you write negative 57 seconds, that probably doesn't make sense, right? I actually told them, you know, if you say, I got this answer, I know it doesn't make sense, but I, you know, this is the work I did, this is the answer I got, like, I would give credit for acknowledging the fact that you knew that your answer didn't match up with the question, right? I mean, it's like, you know, you're saying, I looked at this and this is not right, right? I'm telling you I know my answer is wrong, but I know it doesn't make sense. Like, there's benefit to admitting that you've made a mistake or something like that, right? Hiding it really does.
Let me ask you about any questions that we haven't covered. Anything you think of that you'd like to know that we didn't cover today? Yes.
I was just curious, timeline from start to finish. I'm sure it varies for like
probably from start to finish, maybe like 60 days or...
I was going to say, it's highly variable, and it depends who's requesting your clearance, right? So I think my understanding of things is they sort of have a priority, right? So, like, if a government agency is putting you in, like, say, directly to work for NSA or DOD directly, it seems to go a lot faster than if you're working for, like, I work for Northrop Grumman, right? My understanding is that it can go a lot faster if you're applying for a government position versus an industry contractor position. It's also highly variable depending on what's in there. If you have pretty much nothing of interest on your form, it'll go a lot faster than if you have things that they have to look into. And doesn't even mean they're bad things, you know, that they have to look into, but just, I mean, for example, my father-in-law is British. That always makes things take longer for me. Because he's not an American citizen, but he's, you know, so it's just a story I heard from a coworker, and I mean, I obviously can't verify this because this was well before my time, but he was saying, you know, they had a guy on their team whose mother-in-law lived in East Germany, right? Communist East Germany. And, you know, she would frequently visit, and they had children, so she was visiting her grandchildren, and they viewed that as a risk because, they kind of said, you know, the grandmother, you know, what if she kidnapped the children, and, you know, you had to choose between
doing something, you know, to, I'll say, save your children. I mean, I, you know, this was the way the story was told to me, you know, or upholding your, you know, upholding your obligations to the security clearance. I mean, you know, those are the kind of things where they say they want to make sure you're not bribable. They viewed this East German woman as a big risk for him, and so they wouldn't clear him to this certain thing. And they said, I mean, you know, they never said this for sure, but shortly after she died, he was cleared, right? So it was like they saw it as no longer a threat. And I, like I said, I can't verify the accuracy of that story, but that's kind of, you know, I mean, it's not even something he did, right? But it was something that was related to him by, I mean, okay, yes, he chose to marry who he chose to marry and, you know, whatever, but, for example, I was married well before I started this process. I mean, I most certainly never thought of, you know, the fact that my father-in-law is British.
There's a couple of, as you're hearing, there's a few variables that determine how long it's going to take. Is it your first time getting one? Is it your reinvestigation? When 9/11 happened, the process got longer. When Edward Snowden did what he did, the process got longer. When the OPM hack occurred, the process stopped. It just stopped until they got things back in order. So those things can happen, but typically I'm finding people 18 to 24 months. Going for the higher levels, but the lower levels don't take as long.
Right. Yeah.
But the higher levels, and they will talk to you later.
Oh, my husband has a security clearance as well, and one of my neighbors stopped by and was like, I just want to let you know there's people over here asking about your husband, like, you know, I just want to let you know they stopped by.
Yes,
so,
ma'am.
Okay.
Yeah, what about when people steal your identity? Where did these people do get on you?
Well,
when you have identity theft,
yeah,
then you take the necessary precautions to restate your identity. And so probably if you had a clearance, you need to report that, as this has occurred, my identity was taken. So long as you take the steps to reinstate it, to close out things.
It probably just makes stuff take longer.
You just have to be reported for when your next investigation comes up. It's pretty much, is anything different now than 5 years ago? Oh yeah, well I had this identity. But I would suggest it right away.
I was going to say, too, when you were asking, I thought you were first going to ask how long it takes to fill out the form. And that also depends on things. Like, one thing you have to do is put in your residence history for the last 7 or 10 years or something like that. And I found as a, you know, recent graduate filling that out, it was a real big pain in the butt.
You've lived in a lot of places.
Yeah, like, you know, because I lived on campus, and then I was home for the summer, and then I lived on campus again, and then I lived off campus. You know, like, it was... And so if you... if this is something that, you know, you think you're going to be going through this process...
Be prepared.
Yeah, you might want to start gathering information. You need to put down someone who can verify that you lived there for the last... I don't know, was it the whole time? I can't remember. But so, like... If you don't have that information, you might want to start collecting it, just it'll make your life easier when you go to fill it out. Or also, you know, if you think, if you're currently a student and you think, you know, this might be something you go through at the end, you know, then anywhere you live here forward, you're going to want to make sure you know, keep that information or, you know, I mean, it's pretty simple. Like, if you have a landlord, like, your landlord can verify. It doesn't have to be your best friend or, you know, whatever. It just has to be someone who can verify that you live there.
We may be scaring you with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Look into. So you ask yourself, why Bob? You know, if you're a person that likes technology and you want to know, you want to work and develop and design things that can change the world, that's how you get to the farthest part of the leading edge. That's the real reason for doing this. If you just want a job, you can get a job without a security plan. But if you really want to do the neat stuff that we can't tell you about, get it.
I was visited by an investigator on someone that lived with me for only maybe a couple of months. They came in, and now I didn't hear of anyone being investigated when I went through my process. So I think she probably was going for a higher clearance than what I originally went for. But they did come to my house and ask me some questions about her. So simply because I lived with her for a while, or she lived with me pretty much is what it was. So we were roommates, and that's what I said about cohabitants and anyone who may know you well or know your character. They, you know, depending on the clearance level, they may come and interview. Just like Lindsay said, her husband, someone was investigating her husband and talked to the neighbors. So
I was going to say, another thing they do, and this is something I didn't realize, they ask you to put down three people who have known you for a long time, right? And you put people down, and they go and talk to people. But when they talk to people, they say, who else should I talk to? So they actually interview people that you haven't written down. So I remember Ted and I both presented at this last year, and I remember there was a question like, what if there are people I don't want them to talk to? You don't get to make that decision, right? They probably will talk to them. And that's, you know, one person was very concerned. She's like, my ex-husband's going to say really bad things about me, right? They understand that he's your ex-husband, right? I mean, they, you know, they filter the information they get. Like, what's the source, right? I mean, so, again, it's really looking at the whole person, you know, and your trustworthiness and stuff like that. So just because someone, you know, you're like, oh, if they talk to this person doesn't like me and they're going to say bad things about me, right? If this person is the only thing that has anything negative to say about you, you know, they're going to wonder why, you know, why this person said this and, you know.
No one else said that.
No one else had anything similar to say, so. Do you have three people you can write down who know you well? Okay.
But sometimes people can say something bad about you because the people don't think that who you are that
Sure. I mean, but they're not going to talk to everyone you've ever met, right? You're going to write down three people that know you well. They'll talk to them, but they're going to ask them, you know, who else should I talk to? And presumably, right, they would also recommend other. I mean, if you're a good candidate, they're going to recommend other people who are going to say good things about you. They're not going to be like, oh, this person really doesn't like that person, so you should definitely go talk to the person who doesn't like her and is going to say untrue bad things. You know,
as far as something being false, I'm sure they have your records, so they can verify these things. Okay, so if someone says, oh, she did this, that, and the other, and it if it doesn't match up with what they have, then you know, so they do they go back and verify. They don't just take everyone's word for, you know, what they're saying. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about something being false.
So why do you want to clear? You came to the session, tell me why you want to clear. What interests you enough to want to come and learn about? I know this young lady in the front wants to be a contract. I can see it buzzing in her eyes. But what interests you about?
I mean, it's also really like it. One missed payment is not gonna like sound the alarms. It's like, I think the question is, are you like 90 days or more behind or something like that, right? Or like, you missed a payment. Everyone can make a mistake, right? One mistake, it's, you know, do you miss every other payment? Do you, you know, those are more the kind of things they're gonna be concerned about. Like I said, one mistake pretty much anywhere isn't gonna end things for you unless your one mistake is, I killed a guy. Like, you know what I mean, though? Like, I killed a guy this one time. Well, you know, but, you know, one missed payment on something or one, you know, I got a horrific traffic ticket or something like that, right? If it happened once, okay. I think in Virginia, it's like if you're driving more than 25 miles over the speed limit, it's a felony or something like that, right? I mean, like, you do that? That sounds so good. So.
Yeah, no felony conviction.
Yeah.
Anyone else? What interests you about that? Do you know you probably will make more money with the time? No known history back then. Mostly because of the opportunities that you'll be afforded to work. It typically equates to a higher paying position.
Yeah,
know, so your clearance is worth something. I mean, they're always, I mean, so we're in, Ted and I are both in the Baltimore area, but in the Baltimore, D.C. area, NSA is there and stuff, and they're, someone was telling me there's, over by NSA's campus, there's a group of buildings that contractors all have space in that support things that go on NSA. And there's a whole bunch of food trucks that go over there at lunchtime, right, for people. And what companies started doing was, like, there's so much in demand looking for, especially computer science, but a lot of engineering things that they will offer. They're like, you bring me your resume, I will buy you lunch at this food truck. Like, I mean, that's what they're like coming out on the street, you know, like, trying to recruit people by just little things like, I will buy you lunch if you bring me your resume.
Why is that? Because my job is in recruiting. That occurs because there are fewer people than jobs in this space. There's not enough people to do all the work that's in this space. So we compete heavily for the few people who have the right degrees, who have the right clearances. We do the same thing. You buy a hot dog, the rapper, I say no to problem. You know, we constantly advertise.
Have we really ever done that?
We're on the table tents because we have to compete. We've got 10 jobs, she's got 10 jobs, she's got 10 jobs, only 5 people have the clearance. You will be highly sought after if you go through and successfully clear this hurdle. Because not everybody can do it. Yes?
So, there is no way to get a security clearance before you have a pre-existing offer. You can't.
No, because you have to be sponsored. You can't just walk off the street and say, I want to get clearance, go. You have to be hired by a company who's willing to sponsor you for that clearance because there's a cost involved. So we typically won't put a person in for a clearance until we've had them as an intern for a while and we know we're going to hire them. We may start the process then. But they've kind of verbally committed that they're going to come back to work for us. You know, we're not going to put you in the process, pay $10,000, $20,000, and you go off with another company.
So would it be worth it for an individual to invest that money themselves?
You can't. You have to be smart. You have to be working. Remember, need to know?
Yeah.
You have to be in a position where you have a need to know for the company to say, okay, I'm going to put this person through the process. They've identified you for a job. In this space, the government keeps tight control on the number of people. They're called ticket fulfillers. It may only be 10 for that clearance. And that's it, 10. And so there can't be an 11th person, so one of the other people gives that ticket up and another person gets it. It's very tightly controlled.
In my company, they might occasionally ask if you still need your clearance level because we sometimes, you know, we jump from Newport News Shipbuilding is really huge, it's big, and so we might not be working on the same contract that we were 5 years ago. We may not need the clearance level that we had before, so I have been asked, do you still need this clearance level? And we just pretty much say yes, because you might need it in the future. No one gave me a hard time, but they do ask, because if you don't need it, then you will get bumped down. It's all about that need to know.
Any other questions on this side? We're all pretty quiet.
I think in your identity, if somebody accuses you, if they has power.
Can you repeat that?
Have your identity can be if it's come from the high power people.
If someone pretty high up, you know, is trying to say that you're not all that, or that your identity. You're saying why would someone in that position say something false? I mean, they can get in trouble for saying something false. If someone is trying to tell you, say that you did something, if they can be, you know, reprimanded, I guess, for giving false accusations. So yeah, if it's not true, then yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. Like I said, they do investigate. If someone in high authority says something, well, pretty much if they're in high authority, they're going to make sure they're telling the truth. They don't want to they don't want to scar their reputation. If they are, they don't want to get that reputation of lying. So, yeah.
I'm just curious, actually, for the audience members, what, I mean, we've heard from a couple people what they're studying, but what are you studying, or what do you work in right now? I'm just curious.
I'm a petroleum research on biosensors.
Cool. A biologist that does research in basic protein biochemistry. But in my field, security clearance and support for that, even at the university level, because we're open to, like, if we were to take the infectious
disease.
So, upon that, even that, so I'm like, well, if I want to continue further in the research industry, I'm going to
I'm a freshman
from the
so glad you're here. That is so cool. That is so cool. That's cool. Learn everything you can. I like it.
I am currently in the Enterprise Resource Planning ERP system, specifically at the University, so I'm not sure which I would be.
I know a lot of people who do SAP, so. So yes is the answer.
I'm actually a double major. I mean, biotechnology in addition to digital forensics and
other. It's kind of more like you get to choose where you want to go instead of you have to say.
That works for still down the street. You have options. So imagine, you get a STEM degree and you have this many options. You have a STEM degree with a background that you can get cleared. The options just the same.
Because you have all those options.
Awesome. All right, if there's no more questions, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming. And stick around if you'd like to have a further conversation.
If you have enjoyed this presentation, be sure to attend the Women of Color in Technology STEM Conference. For more information, visit us online at www.womenofcolor.net or call us at 410-244-7101. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening.